Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, December 12th, 2019. It's 9 o'clock a.m. We are gathered for the Board of County Commissioners Administrative Workshop. Our first agenda item is a discussion with the City of Cave Junction regarding a letter dated November 20th regarding MOU implementation of project for improvements to lighting, security, and public appearance in the City of Cave Junction commercial zones. We are privileged to have City Councilor, our mayor, and I don't know what you're titled now, Becky.
City Recorder.
City Recorder, yes. All with us, so thank you for coming in and meeting with us this morning. I understand you guys have to make another two-hour trip as soon as you're done here, so we'll try to get going straight away.
And that's one way. Uphill.
Yes.
In the snow.
And the snow. Barefoot.
They have snow?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. Mayor,
yeah, calm
just
down.
Don't even listen to me, okay?
All right.
Don't listen to me.
Thank you.
There's a lot. I'll just throw out there. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So we got this letter and we went over it last week and we had some questions of some things in there, kind of where it came from. And then, of course, we started getting inquiries from media asking about components of that we had not heard of yet. So our standard would be to go back to the original MOU and see what did that say. But another area is just kind of our charter precludes us from changing fees at the commission or the staff level. We have a process once a year that we have to go through a hearing and a uniform fee process. And sometimes those fees are changed as little as $10, $5. They could be a couple hundred. But so when there's a portion that says that the county has agreed to provide reduced permits at a reduced rate of 60%, I don't know that we have the authority to do that in an MOU. We would have to go through that uniform process and have a hearing before the public and all that other process to get it approved through a standardized system. So we can't just change fees. We don't have the authority to do that.
We were told that was authorized. I called Mark Stevenson specifically,
mm-hmm.
and he had said that that would be fine.
He doesn't have the authority to do that.
All right.
And not
that.
Only does he not have the authority to do that, we
don't have the authority
to do that because of our charter. We
right.
would so we literally give notice in the newspaper. We give notice in for weeks in advance before an advance hearing. And then we have a hearing just
right.
for our fees.
Right.
And that's the process that we go through annually. Once a year, we change fees through that process. So we would have to do it in that process
right.
and announce 60% reduction for these types of permits.
Right.
And have a chance to get public feedback and then vote and weigh on that. So it's not something that in our structure of governance, we're not authorized to do with our
right.
charter.
Can we do that on a one-by-one basis? In other words, if Cave Junction submitted an application to do that, and there, could it be put on the agenda for just that one thing, or do you have to say for all municipalities doing something similar that the fee would then be for this much for a certain amount of time?
I would ask Wally to weigh in on that. If
just for Cave Junction?
Yeah, I mean, just for
just
this
one.
Let's say take this MOU here. Could they submit an application? We put that on the agenda. We hear it, public hearing, to lower the fees as it states, as what you all heard, and do it for just that one, this one project? Can you do it by a project?
Because the purpose of that was to help reduce the cost for our business owners. Because even though we're trying to help them, it's still getting an electrician and doing that process is still going to be an expense for some of these business owners. So we were trying to see what we could do to help mitigate
right.
some of those costs.
But the county is already providing money that is supposed to be helping with the project, too. I mean, that's
right.
$150,000.
Right.
That
well,
is.
And the electrical permit is only $60, so you'd be reducing it to $40, which is only a $20 savings when you're already offering $750 to $250.
Or reverse
we could
that
strike
and
that sentence.
I think
okay.
we could. I don't think that's a make or break.
And let me tell you, it's not
break.
Something that I'm not wouldn't support. It's that
right.
who has the authority to change fees when we
right.
go through a process once a year to do it in a public hearing?
I think the pushback would be also is that when we give up a fee or anything, that we're giving up taxpayer
exactly.
money from the rest of the county.
Right.
The rest of the county pays in, and yet we're going to say, okay, we're going to give it back to you in the form of a discount. We might get some pushback on that.
No,
so
I
would like to see your project go through as smoothly as possible with the least amount of pushback. And I think, as Commissioner Fowler said, it's $20.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, I don't think I want to raise that big flag for $20.
Right. And so, yeah, I think that's an easy one to.
I don't think there'll be a problem.
Yeah, not a deal breaker.
Well, and there is something potentially we could do in reaching out to you guys and City of Grants Pass, saying when it is a government entity to a government entity, since it's taxpayer dollar to taxpayer dollar, is there a process of waiving the cost except for something? But we'd have to go through the process of putting it in our system that it's already
there.
This is a taxpayer dollar.
No,
this
I know.
This is our taxpayer dollar to the private sector, reducing a fee to the private sector consistent across the board for everybody. That'd be my reservation about that portion. But if it's not a deal breaker, I think it's well worth
striking,
scrapping that out,
I agree.
So that it doesn't hold up anything else.
All right.
Okay. No, we thought we were going to do the right.
Yeah, yeah. You formed this on the information you have. So,
true
you know.
And true. And so then back on page one of the memorandum, in section
one. On the MOU or the letter?
The MOU. Mm.
The MOU?
I know.
You're talking about the implementation plan. Yes. That's in front of you.
Yeah, I guess it is the implementation plan. It says MOU right above it. But.
Right. Execute an implementation plan for improvements in. So explaining,
right.
this is our opportunity to explain to you what we'd like to do according
right.
to the MOU.
Which, yeah, and we've looked at the proposal, the implementation proposal, and just had a couple questions. Like I said, I don't know if we have to go through the whole thing, but on that page one, it has in the, under section one, second paragraph, the City of Cave Junction, Oregon State Police, Oregon or Josephine County Sheriff's Department, and then it says OSP. Is that Oregon State Police twice?
Probably it is.
Probably, so we can get rid of that OSP.
But I don't even know if that's going to be changed too.
Right, and then the managing party of CJ Patrol. We also had a problem with that being in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's going to be stricken.
Yeah, take those two things out: the OSP and the. CJ Patrol.
We've actually thought about that a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Becky has talked to Sheriff Daniels, and live feed is not as useful to them. And
mm-hmm.
And we've talked to our insurance agency, and they said live feed is a problem. You either, for us, if we only let one entity see it, then they are acting under our
recorded feed.
What?
Live feed is not a problem. It's recorded feed that's the problem.
My understanding was live feed is a problem if you only allow one entity to look at it, then they are acting under our permission and we are liable if something happens. So for live feed, they said either everyone sees it or no one
right.
sees
all,
it.
All the OSP, sheriff,
public, everybody.
Just be available on the website, like, yeah.
And then we thought about that and not sure how comfortable we were with that. And maybe a more elegant solution is to go, and I went back and looked at the MOU. The MOU definitely leans more towards individual businesses having cameras. So we thought that what we could do is have a live camera, like two of them, one on the north side of town, the south side of town, and a lot of cities do this. Have that on our website. People can see what the city looks like.
Like ODOT's
yeah.
camera on top
yeah.
of Sexton.
Yes. Yeah. And then make the cameras available to individuals, I mean to businesses. You know, we can do a match thing with them so that they can get good cameras. And if they choose to watch their live feed all night and see something happening, they can call the sheriff's department. It would take the city liability out.
I'm just curious. You have a contract with the sheriff's office for patrol, and I don't remember if it's one or two deputies at this point that you guys have contract. Okay. But Sheriff's Office has, in the process of hiring 4 additional dispatchers,
right.
So they're going to have dispatch longer hours in the day.
Right.
I'm wondering if that partnership could be explored as an opportunity. I don't know. I'm just wondering what... It is something they have live TV. You can look on downtown here. They do it at Christmas time, or they did it on construction
mm-hmm.
sites. You can look at the Eugene track and field complex going up and seeing the progress of the project. You can look at Eagles and have a camera on Eagles and walk live anytime. I mean, so there's plenty of things that are out there that justify live view. If you put it on the businesses, though, then those businesses control the feed.
Of their own cameras.
Right.
Yes.
Correct.
To their camera would be just
right.
similar.
Versus
they,
the city camera.
Right. Yeah. And they would also be responsible for backing it up.
Personally, just on the, as not even the first base yet, but I like your idea of having one at each end of the town, like very much like ODOT does on top of the Siskiyou to let you know what's going on. I think the fact is that people, you've got a issue out there with people doing
mm-hmm.
roundy rounds out in the middle of the street, and I think if they figured that they were on somebody's camera somewhere, that might just kind of curb that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. And you know, just that it's there, you could, before you go to town, you can see how many people are there. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you don't want to go to town when it's crowded, don't. But I think, and for right now, I think it's a great idea to that's your the limit of your
liability.
Surveillance or whatever you want to call it of your town is one on each end, showing the main highway. I guess is what you're doing. Also, it'd be handy for people coming and going. You know, say, well,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't there, and you go, hey, you're on camera. Well, that's mine. I don't know the legal side of it. But.
What do the businesses say?
Haven't brought this up to them yet. This all happened, really exploded, and that's this week.
One of the challenges for the businesses that I would like to see overcome by this program is that when people consider purchasing cameras for security purposes or being able to have a message on their phone when there's action or movement, which is really beneficial, they'll go and go and purchase a $300 or $400 camera, which really is an expense to them, but then they don't get any much benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras that allow you notification on your smartphones and that have a good backup system and a good tracking system and a good picture, they cost a little bit more. And so I'm hoping that we can encourage the businesses to spend a little bit more if we can offer them some financial matching, similar to what we were doing at the,
lighting project,
yes. So that they will upgrade their camera systems. They can take responsibility for their camera systems and the backup. I'm not even sure that, I haven't researched this, but if there's live feed on our website, I'm hoping we don't have to back that up at all. It's just for viewing.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, I'm curious, I know I've heard through the years over and over of that business put a camera in and it was stolen. Or, you know, it's kind of the damage or this and that. And I think when I remember hearing that you guys were kind of doing a citywide one, it was kind of like, well, that's cool because maybe it can be higher on the power poles or it can be out of reach of just easily accessible to a burglar or a thief or something like that. But I think I'd be interested in I can't assume your liability. So that's something that you guys as a governing body have to discuss with your own attorney on what you want to face with that. But I wonder which is the cheaper option. Is it one off a camera here, one off a camera there, or is it buying a system and having it holistically and those, you know, and just part of, you know, developing some kind of hold harmless or something that, I don't know if that's something possible to reduce liability. And again, that's between you guys and your attorney and stuff like that, but which one is going to get you most bang for the buck?
I think the problem that we would have with live feed is somebody needs to be there monitoring it for it to be useful. And that's why I thought it was kind of a little more elegant. If the businesses take some responsibility, if it's their camera, then they can monitor as much as they want. The other thing that I'm not sure if it helps the businesses as much is the cameras were going to be on a net, and mostly just on the main part of the main street is where they all were. So does that, how much does that specifically help in an individual business where they could place it wherever they, where they think the vulnerable areas are?
Inside and out.
Yeah.
I think I like the idea of helping with a match, and that's the extent of the city of Cape Junction gets involved in it. If you produce the camera, say, yeah, we get a big good deal on 30 of them, and then you come buy them from us, I think that you're tying it again. I think if you separate yourself from that and you offer just help in the form of a match or whatever, I think that probably splits, that's the fence that somebody would have to jump that says you're involved at all. And I think I would, because you don't know what, we can all sit here and try to figure out what that recorded feed is going to be used for. That's personal. When the guy with the pharmacy says, I want a recorder for a month. I want a month back. So I find out 3 days later that somebody stole Oxycontin or whatever, whatever the stuff's called. I want to be able to go back and look at it. Very similar. I have a place in the industrial park out there, and the guy that has the industrial park, at any time something blips on him, and he just looks out on his phone, and he knows. He said, yeah, while you're out there, would you go check something? I said, yeah, I'd be glad to, because I'm out there on a Sunday. Nobody else is around, but he's got it on his phone all the time, and I think that's valuable, say, a pharmacy or a bar or a tailor's or whatever, that they could have that capability through the phone system, but it's theirs.
Yes.
It's not going to have anything to do with you.
And
you,
we're partnering with
you're just partnering on a,
with
on
a business,
making it easy for them to purchase
that capability.
Right.
And we're
and not everybody, you know, not everybody. If you just say that it's a match across the board for all businesses, you're not discriminating, saying, well, this guy can't afford it, so we're going to help him a little bit more. It's got to be even across the board, and it's just an offer.
Yep.
And then, you know, if they see the value in it, and sometimes, you know, two or three people see the value in it, and they convince their neighbors, you know, we really need to do this because it worked for me. And then the program takes off. But I don't know. That's just my own personal opinion as this from this song.
I would agree with that.
I think a lot. The good thing about this program is it's not that will help with the whole public safety thing. Is the cameras, the safety cameras, but are also the lighting. You know, there's going to be better street lighting, but then there we are looking at. That the other match with the businesses is lighting for around their buildings too, and maybe hopefully that would help with the step, you know.
When ODOT did their revamp of Cape Junction, probably what, 10 years ago maybe now,
something
that they
about right.
widened the road and everything, did they add street lights and things of that sort at that time?
No.
I wonder if ODOT, and Rob knows more about ODOT, he's forgot more about ODOT than I know. But do you think ODOT might be interested? Rob Brandis is our public works director. If you think that would be an ask for ODOT to increase lighting on that?
You'd have to sell it, I think, as a traffic safety standpoint.
As a traffic safety.
Yeah,
get an accident count or something inside the city limits?
I think our street lighting is adequate as far as placement. We're going to upgrade it to LED downlighting to get away from the light pollution and to spread out where the light goes
and make
it brighter.
And to reduce the cost.
And they're your lights,
they
and you
are
pay
ours.
The bill on
the
electricity, so it's not like ODOT lit
exactly.
the town. No, you guys.
They provided the poles and stuff.
I grabbed the MOU because I wanted to see what was originally kind of the intent and what was so that we're kind of using that as a guide. And one of the things... So under the Statement of Mutual Benefit, it starts with a need in the proposal. Under Section 2 in the proposal is upgrades to security cameras. Security cameras are often proposed as a tool for law enforcement, but just as often those images are such poor quality that they are not effective. This project would identify effective and affordable cameras, offer a bulk purchasing opportunity, and assist business owners and law enforcement officials in positioning and installing the cameras for maximum utility. So that's the gist of what it says that we're going to do. So the idea is that we're not just helping one business buy a camera, that we would get the benefit of the bulk purchasing if that's safer. But then further, it does Only the 105 is for the implementation. The 50 was set aside as the matching for the private businesses to try to help. That's supposed to be a one-to-one match. So that's not necessarily towards the whole project budget. So that 50,000 was meant to be the one-to-one match for the businesses to help with that cost. Mm-hmm.
Does it say one-to-one in there?
It does say one-to-one.
It does say one-to-one.
So commit 105,000. Josephine County shall commit 105,000 to be available for planning, design, and completion of infrastructure project addressing nighttime lighting and security in the downtown area. So our 105 is for plan, design, implementation of the lighting and security alone. Mm-hmm. Then the D says make available 50,000 for one-to-one matching funds to private businesses located adjacent to Highway 199 in the City of Cape Junction's commercial zones. So kind of have to look at the budget in terms of that and, mm-hmm. and what was agreed upon on there. But it does say under suggested draft scope, identify and convene representatives of parties and stakeholders to participate in the plan and implementation. We recruit the consultants and agencies that need to be part of it, the scope, and then get it going. But this does not restrict Josephine County or City of Cape Junction from participating in similar activities with other public or public agencies, organizations, and individuals. I'm wondering if you guys can work with your attorney an MOU or some kind of contract with Cape Junction Patrol that gives them access to monitor on your behalf. Or is it Sheriff's Office to monitor on your behalf through an IGA or something like that? But what can be, so it doesn't open you up to everybody. You have a contract to specifically do it for that purpose.
Our insurance company, what I heard from them is they were uncomfortable. I'm not sure if it was more than uncomfortable, that if we allow one agency, you know, even if it's the public sheriff's department, that's okay. They have a lot more coverage. But if we do a private organization like CJ Patrol, then that makes us liable.
Right.
Yeah, it's really our insurance company that has swayed our concept here more so than our attorney. It's our insurance company that's saying this is there's too much liability here, and you also have to consider public records laws where we have to back up. If we're creating feed, then we have to back up that feed unless it's live stream available 24/7 to everybody. I don't have to back that up. That's just a benefit that people can plug into our website and see what's going on downtown Cape.
But then the sheriff's office also can't retain it for if something happened, you want to be able to go back and get that clip so that you have evidence.
Right.
If it's just live stream and it's not being stored somewhere, you would never be able to retain evidence.
Our CIS, that's our insurance company, recommended that as a minimum we back up for like 7 days, mm-hmm. Which is not too bad. I know.
I actually, earlier in my life, job was to monitor security cameras. I worked for the campus security at my university that covered several blocks, kind of like your downtown area in Seattle, and my job was to watch all of the closed-circuit TVs, and they had motion on some, so you'd trigger when the motion went off, but my job was to sit there all night and watch those cameras. So I understand the language of it and all that fun stuff, and, oh, something happened, let's zoom in and get it, but you do have to retain how to change the tapes and all that kind of stuff, but I think technology has increased in the way that it can be done so much better these days.
Yeah, so much more affordable.
There
and the clarity's better.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Does CIS give you a roadmap? That's what I think of being. We keep, every time we throw, you thrown out what you would like to see in CIS. No, don't do that, don't do that. Do they have a roadmap? I'm sure you're not the first municipality.
We are not. In fact, they were in a lawsuit the day that I was contacted. She had just got out of court. And fighting to defend a city, and they knew that there was no way they were going to win, because
I would think that they would have the broad experience to say this isn't going to work, that isn't going to work.
Right.
So this is a model that we have, that we suggest, that has worked in other municipalities of your size and shape, and your requirement, and just say, do you have a roadmap? Do you have a menu that we can just check the boxes, and this is what we want to do, and these are all accepted things that we can do, that, like you say, we want live feed, but we also, they say, well, you should back it up for maximum of 7 days. You need a roadmap that tells you that, so we're not just sitting here guessing, and you go back and forth to them, and we could be at this until cows come.
I guess with that in mind, you guys have to decide, do you want to be the owners of the cameras that you do retain for 7 days, but you just provide to the public or general or whoever it is with live feed, and then if sheriff's office or something needs the evidence, they contact you guys through your contract, and you can follow up with that. If you do it to the businesses, there's no guarantee you have access to the information anyhow. It's not necessarily a community safety. It's that individual business, and it's up to that owner whether they share it or not. So,
I don't remember the comment from CIS that we had to back up live feed that would be on our website. If there was going to be security cameras that we were going to allow access to anyone on, that definitely has to be backed up.
And the other thing I heard really clearly,
I didn't mean backup to live feed. I'm just saying, you keep a week's worth of recordings or whatever the appropriate amount is, because why have cameras if you're not recording it?
Well, that's what my opinion was, too, except for we thought how nice it would be on our website for people to be able to plug into the website and see,
and just see live feed
and see what's going on in Cave Junction.
And I'm so
technology like it is, you should be able to have that live feed and record those cameras.
So the challenge, all those, if you back cameras up, is that you have to make it available to the public.
Well, no, it's not just what I have heard them say is if you have live feed, it either has to be everybody has access to it, or it, if only specific people have access to it, then the city's responsible.
Yeah, but if it's live feed on your website, everybody does have
access. Right,
if it's
on that's right. New York, but that's not what the way the MOU was, the implementation plan was written.
Okay, right.
That's the problem.
I just wanted to throw in, I'm Larry Graves, director for the airports. Hi, how are you guys doing? I have live cameras at both airports, mm-hmm. and we record, but on our website, we only offer from a special secure folder that our IT group set up, a frame grab every 1 minute. Because of the security implications of having a live feed that are available on your website, they can be accessed, you can be hacked, it's a tough issue. So whoever your security provider is, you might want to talk to them about that. We do 1 minute updates, and it's a still photo, but it changes every minute. So you kind of see what's going on, but it's not a live feed, which is much less secure than just looking at a photo.
But you record separately. That's not available to the public. Just
correct.
That snapshot every minute.
Yeah, we have a 4 terabyte box that records continuously, and we have access to that.
It's an old flight DATIC recorder.
Basically,
737.
How urgent is it? I know this said something about nothing more than 12 months. We're past the 12 months originally anyhow, so I think if we need to update an MOU to extend our working together, what can we do to help? What technical assistance? I know you guys are with CaveNet. I don't know if they offer security technical.
Nobody has been advising us on this whole project.
She's been very involved with us.
I don't know that we're rushed. I don't think we're going to push for it to be rushed. We'd rather get it right than rushed.
It'd be nice to have it ready for this spring for people to start doing stuff during the construction season. Yeah.
I don't see on your actual MOU, there's just a couple of little points, but your main premise is solid. You know, why you want to do it, what you want to do, and
we're ready to rock and roll.
We hammered out
the
match that we're going to do, and so on and so forth.
The city lighting project is nice, clean. It's all ready to go, and it's just that basically the security camera, part that is the question mark that maybe needs a little more work or input from the community.
Well, because it looks like you in changing this implementation plan, you'd want to add your business security piece where you'd have the matching funds for them to put in their own camera systems.
If that's what
makes sense, and I think it does, because more cameras is better. It could be the same type of offer as the lighting program.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just be a security offering. Sounds like we need to go back to 1-to-1 to match the MOU instead of 1-to-3.
Well, and also the limit of the 105 to the lighting and the security. It wasn't right. part of the public appearance portion.
It just seemed like there's a few things to change.
The public appearance is 50, right?
Right.
Hold
and
on.
That's how yes. it's written.
And the MOU...
But the MOU doesn't specify what the $50,000 will be used for.
It does say it's for that the it's public just appearance. One-to-one matching for the private businesses.
And I think
right.
we do have that. Looks
okay.
Correct. On the new... went back and check that. So public appearance is the 50.
Yes, that's where we had thought we would use that money.
Actually,
I don't see. Okay, so you have project match 46 admin 4.
Yeah.
Is that on the new budget sheet?
That's on the new budget sheet. Yeah. Yeah.
Which
okay, I got it right here. I just lost it for a second.
That's not quite how the MOU is written. I think we thought the small amount that, because we haven't figured out how to administer this, city doesn't have it.
I hear you. I think that's part of, I don't know what we're all bringing in part of the collaboration, though, is our contributions of our time and efforts. And so I would be interested in seeing how we can partner and help if you would like us to be one of the people at the table helping with the plan and the implement. Because it sounds like...
I personally would love to see a project manager to get this done. I think if we had had a project manager from the very get-go, this would have happened.
Well,
and using some of the monies to... pay for that project manager?
I think it would have happened a lot quicker and we'd be done by now, and I think it would have been a lot cleaner project.
At an expense, though.
Well, I was looking at the possibility of a rare person
right.
To do part of this program and some other stuff for the cities.
What's that?
It is part of the AmeriCorps mm-hmm. and administered through University of Oregon. They take their students and provide a lot of support for them, oh. and it's a whole program.
It's an internship.
It's an internship, year sort of, and it's a one-year thing. And I did apply for it last year, but it was kind of a late application, and we weren't accepted. But they just have submitted the application. It just opened again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was really considering that again. And we did have the budget for it. We had worked it out. We have to do a match for this the RARE program. And we did have it in our budget, but we just didn't.
That sounds promising.
Yes, and that's what I was thinking. It would be somebody to help focus this. We just don't have the staff to address it.
Commissioner Fowler, would you be interested in working with this project?
I could, but I still need legal backup because I don't know all the rules. But absolutely.
And then through you, we have access to any of our people that
right.
maybe like that Larry Graves suggestion or who you know or that kind of
right.
stuff that access
right.
to who
and,
else is doing what
and get
that
some of the things
from.
We talked about today in this implementation
the
document.
Well, and the good thing
right.
is that with
yes.
your electrical background that would be extremely
that doesn't
helpful
hurt.
To us.
No.
Just his knowledge of yeah. how things work. But
that's right.
I just wanted for us what we said last week is we want the outcome to be win-win.
Yeah.
So even though we had questions, it's not that we're against the project in any way.
Totally understand.
We want to see this carry through. We want to see it to be something that increases the security of the community, the safety of people visiting. We want to be a part of supporting and encouraging. So our goal is to make sure that we're doing it right, but that the outcome is a win-win.
Well, I totally get that, and I'm relieved that there's not a rush because I was feeling a little bit... pushed about this because
mm-hmm.
this project was started even before I became mayor. So
right. Before the election.
Yes. So I'm glad that we have the time that you're not concerned and we can do this right.
Yeah. And I think
we're really there. And I'm wondering if it's do we have to pass the whole thing or can we start with it? Like the lighting, I think, there's no question about that project.
Do you have a problem with us doing it in sections?
We just have to separate it out
paper-wise
so that we could sign it.
And what it does is, we're required to sign off on the plan, so if we break it down and we're going to say this part A, part B, part C, but realize we don't want all the money spent in part A or you won't have the money left to do the other, but we can look at that as a whole. But I would say that maybe we can do that as further is coming, but this is the first implementation part, and phase one.
Do we do a separate MOU for each faith?
I would probably
just separate implementation.
Separate implementation.
Yeah.
I think the MOU could stand on its own.
Okay. Right.
The implementation.
Phase one, phase two,
and I would just put
three.
In the wording of the implementation phase one, saying phase two for security and blah blah are forthcoming.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The reason I was going with separate MOU is that if something hung up on this security thing for a while, the first MOU is solid. And if somebody came back and said, we have an issue with it, I don't want the whole project thrown out because something in the security side doesn't meet muster. So I don't know.
I'm just wondering, along those lines as well, the line in the original MOU says the parties want to engage in a cooperative process to accomplish the project goals herein proposed in not more than 12 months. It was signed September 2018.
Okay, then
we're outside of the 12 months already.
Yeah. Right.
So do we need to start with a simple MOU amendum that says we're going to continue this project to completion, or something like that. We're going to take the next thing and agree to phases, and so that it supports what was original, but not acknowledged.
We're still in the game.
And does that come from you folks, or does
that comes from us?
Not the MOU part.
The addendum to the MOU, from us or from you?
Well, original signers were Dan DeYoung, Wally Hicks.
That's what I thought.
Dan Daligowski and Pat Kelly. So you're legal, our legal, our chair.
We work
your
something
mayor,
out that we both agree on.
So I would just suggest an MOU addendum. And we'd bring in a meeting and make a motion, and if we agree to it, to sign it, and then you guys do it, and we'd have original filed. You'd have original filed,
okay.
And then we can.
And then we could send you an implementation plan where we have phase one, which is complete and ready to go, while we work on phase two and three.
Well, and so why don't you guys go back and do that phased approach?
Okay.
And the amendment to the MOU, and I'll do the same thing on my end, and then we'll get together and go, okay, this is what I wanted to see change and what we feel has to be done. You guys say this is what we want to change, and then we'll meld them together real quick and get around corner.
Does it work out that the phases two and three might need to be working on that a little bit longer?
Yeah, I think we'll do that with the amendment to the MOU.
You can get started on your lighting program.
The MOU addendum can add the time.
If the lighting was agreed to.
Run out on the MOU time.
Yeah, why don't we change the MOU time to be like the end of 2020, and that gives us this whole year to get the other phases in.
Okay, that would be good.
But doesn't give us forever.
So MOU addendum stating that we're extending the time through the end of 2020 and that we're going to do a implementation plan in phases.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
And then we'll fix those little things, the ones we talked about.
And it gives them time to get some feedback from partners or insurance or legal, or what do we need to do that the outcome will be safety of the community as a whole and the best option.
And the best use of that money to improve.
Correct.
Exactly.
So it's not nickel and dimed. Yeah. It actually has a bigger
impact.
It also
separates your public input. So the lighting is going to happen. Because it's the whole thing, comprehensive. Now that you're on the security, that's a very personal thing for the businesses, and that's offered to the business. I think that's a good idea.
Public input.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and you're
starting to feel really productive. That's great.
Good.
I like that.
Drive safe.
I like that feeling.
Thank you, Will. Thank you.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Drive safe wherever you go.
You're driving?
I'm driving.
You know, you guys are very good.
They already know what my car looks like. Yeah, I told Jess Sassy a long time ago.
All right.
Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Restroom right down around the corner.
Up next on our agenda is legal counsel. Item 2A is notice of closed landfill at the Kirby Landfill. I assume we have Director Rob Brandis and Wally Hicks for this.
Thank you.
You having pain getting up there, old man?
I have celiac-gameonitis.
I
think back at those days, I'd play three games in a day, three games the next day, and now it's one game in 3 days.
That's with some ibuprofen before and after.
You got
in a couple of years, it'll be 3 days after chopping.
I didn't even hit the deck either. That's the worst part, man.
It's just the normal movement of...
You got it.
Don't worry, soon your son will be able to take one-on-one.
Yeah, probably can. No, it's driving me, sir.
Okay, well, there's a long sorted history here, but it culminates in the county's need to go ahead and file a notice of closed landfill and record that at the clerk's office. And so we're just presenting that here today, and I'd probably recommend just sending it to the consent calendar for next Wednesday after you hear the rest of the story.
So effectively what DEQ is looking to do is have something that goes along with that piece of property, so 50 or 100 years in the future, there's at least something that would be recorded there to say, here's what happened back in
Someone
the past.
Doesn't buy it and say, what?
There's well, yeah, as if there's this 8-acre parcel that's completely flat out in the middle of nowhere with totally different vegetation. But yeah, having not put those things together. So this captures kind of the activity over the last 25 years since it's been closed, and at this point, as you know, it's in effectively a monitoring status. We have not been out there to have to regrade in a couple of years, so the rate of compaction has slowed down. We still monitor for landfill gas, and there's some piezometers. Those are effectively like a long tube that goes down in the ground to measure what's going on with the water down there. There are some contaminants that stay there on site. If they go up a bit, DEQ says, hey, maybe monitor that a bit often. If they go down, they say maybe you don't have to do it as often.
Do you have torches out there like they have out at the landfill?
Not enough to torch off.
I
was kind of hoping it would be kind of cool, but no, they don't. The annual budget.
What happened
to
that bird?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we could set up palm trees and
warm it right up.
Drinks and coconuts. And
warm it right up, yeah. The budget with Parametrics, our contractor, is $19,000. Year, we typically come in more 15 or 16. They've been pretty good at pushing back to DEQ to say, hey, do we really have to do this report every 6 months? Can we go a year? But like I say, we're in a maintenance mode now. We occasionally do some minor grading on the surface work, but year to year, we're not seeing a lot of changes.
How does that affect our seeding? We've seeded that a couple times, haven't we? So you're going to go out there and do minor grading. Are there places where it compacts and you have to fill that in?
Yeah, we've done it, I believe, 4 times over the years, but like I say, it's slowing down. It used to be about every 3 or 4 years you go out and there's 18-inch drops in places because those trenches are 25 feet deep. But that's slowed down quite a bit, and then we're going to do a bigger reseed this spring, but we're also looking for smaller. We don't want a bull pine that's going to drop a taproot all the way down to it, so it's more surface vegetation. Nothing will change the status of that landfill for the foreseeable future.
Did we learn anything from Marlson?
There's not nearly the volume of hazardous chemicals that were buried back in the day, and it's in a much safer spot as opposed to, Marlson, where you've got, effectively more closer occupied property, and it's on a hillside, so
right, okay.
Kirby's kind of up on a bench there. So
as far as your revegetation?
We're not revegetating it at Kirby because it does have a non-permeable cap on top, so we don't want anything to punch
you
the cap there.
Right,
this is basically a soil cap on top. So, yeah, like Wally said, this is just a matter of something to go along with that piece of property, so it's kind of there in perpetuity.
What is the timing now?
DEQ asked for it. They've been asking for it for a while, actually. So we've complied, and here it is.
Well, sounds good.
Close it out.
And we did actually vet this with DEQ. They had no objections.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yep. Sounds good.
Pretty good. Okay.
If we have radioactive hemp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa! Try a hit off of this.
All right. So up next is airports.
All right. That's going business session.
Yeah.
Consent calendar.
Wherever they put it.
I'd recommend consent just to
get
around.
Okay.
Let's
do it.
Thank you.
Grant agreement number 4/2019-3S400053 between Oregon Department of Aviation, Josephine County for matching funds on FAA Project 3/41001109/2019 under Illinois Valley Airport rehabilitation and aligned taxiway removal. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Fabulous.
We have a $333,000 project that's been underway since last year at the Illinois Valley Airport to do preliminary design and environmental assessment for a major runway reconstruction that will start next year. And so, as you are aware, Oregon Department of Aviation has a program that they call the ASAP CORE program, Critical Oregon Airport Resources, where they supply 90% of our matching requirement on federal grants for airports. So this is a $30,000 core grant to help us with our requirement to pay $33,333. So our net out-of-pocket is about $3,300 on this $300,000 project. which is not a bad return.
Bad return.
Or good leverage.
Right?
Just as a note, we want to take the K off of the end of the background information on the face sheet. Because it makes it sound like there's three additional zeros. There's $333 million project.
Hmm. Ah, okay. That's a typo. Yep.
There's a few Ks.
Actually,
there.
All the Ks. Yeah, when we have the full number out, we don't need the K. Because the K essentially is adding.
No, I understand that, yeah. I'll have to speak with my typewriter and get that fixed. Yeah.
I get it. In my thinking of how I'd read it, I'd say it.
You have a typewriter?
Yeah. It's a Royal, or is it an Underwood? I can't remember yet.
Where are you finding ribbons for that thing? Anyway,
yeah, no, I've got them. Yeah.
I can only get the black ribbon. I want the dual red ribbon.
Yeah.
I just bought some. Red.
I love it.
Typewriter,
that's
yeah.
well before any of y'all.
Yeah, must be there by your tape recorder.
Larry and I.
Yeah. I got
your VCR.
Granite chisel. And
Dan, I think everyone in this room had a type on a typewriter at one point.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, probably.
So, what are you asking of us?
I'm asking that at the next WBS you approve this acceptance of this grant. It's been reviewed by legal. Wally is the last signer because of the state and federal regulations that require him to make sure that whoever signs it has the authority to do so. So I would ask that the board allow or delegate the airport liaison commissioner the authority to sign on behalf of the county to accept this $30 million.
Yeah, we'll do that too.
$30,000 grant from the state. Yeah.
I notice it states the economic development, the match. Have you worked that out with Commissioner Fowler?
I have not coordinated with Commissioner Fowler about this, but I have coordinated with Arthur, our CFO, who does coordinate with you quite often.
He does.
And he indicates to me that things are copacetic.
Yes, and this is, like I said, a great, great leverage opportunity. So,
awesome, thank you.
Great, thank you very much.
Up next,
when do you want that? Do you have that ready to go?
I do.
You want to leave it with us?
I will do that. I have one original here.
Are we not sending it to WBS? You wanting it approved today?
I can bring it or give it to Wendy for the WBS.
Is that copacetic?
Sure, that's fine. Next week? Yeah, okay. That's what I was
expecting. You need today.
Yep. Okay. No.
Plus, it's a good thing to tell the public.
Yeah, there's always that.
Up next is emergency management, item B1, State of Oregon Intergovernmental Grant Agreement number 19-517 of the Josephine County Emergency Management for the State Preparedness and Incident Response Grant Program. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Emily Ring, Assistant Emergency Manager. I'm sitting in for Sarah Rubrecht, who's at a different meeting this morning. I do need to edit the title on your agenda. It's the correct grant agreement number, 19-517, but it is not the SPIRE grant. This is actually for the EMPG, or the Emergency Management Performance Grant.
Okay.
So I just wanted to make that note. This grant is awarded annually since 2001. We've received it. It is part of our budget. It must be matched with general funds. That's the way it's been set up since 2001. It covers personnel costs only. Primary reason for that is we regularly pursue grant funds, but those grant funds typically are best successful when you're trying to fund a piece of equipment or a finite program or project. So at this time, the EMPG is used to cover personnel costs within the department. It runs June through July. We are required to create an annual work plan, which is audited on an annual basis. We have quarterly...
Did you say June through July?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in advance.
So it's 2 months long? Or is it July through June?
July through June.
Okay.
Apologies.
Because I wasn't missing something.
Yes, no, July through June. Correct. Good years. So far, we have successfully passed each annual audit, so we then are allowed to apply for the next round, which is where we're at. It has been reviewed by legal, and so I'm here to request your approval to accept the EMPG for this.
The amount's pretty standard, correct?
The amount is fairly standard, yes. The current amount is $86,286. It fluctuates a little bit year to year. OEM sets what we can apply for, but it doesn't fluctuate wildly.
So we can't ask for more if we want to grow the department, or...
OEM lets us know if we can ask for more. They assign, they basically have a lump sum that they assign out and make available to various counties, and then say what is the full amount that you can request. So we can go have conversations with OEM and see if going forward there's a possibility to expand on what we can request in the, through the EMPG, but typically they'll just say it's a fixed amount. That's where we're at the moment.
This is our base funding every year.
Yeah?
Yeah. We have to constantly submit reports back for the reimbursements, but this is how our department has been funded pretty much since general fund monies went away.
Correct.
Any questions, thoughts?
We just have a lot of grants.
95% of our county, I think, is funded.
I know. I think our one grant writer that now we have is already overwhelmed.
Yes.
And something may have to give eventually there.
She's fine.
No, we don't want to lose her. I'm not talking about a person. Just saying that we need to keep taking advantages. And when is there ever going to be a tipping point?
Because
it seems like we're marching toward just more grants in every department.
Yeah.
Is it ever going to stop, or are we going to have 9 grant writers? And
if
eventually...
you want services in the county that are not funded by general fund, that's grant driven.
In emergency management, we are primarily our own grant writers. And it's been that way for a
correct.
While.
It's not a matter. Right. You guys write grants constantly in your department. There may be some interdepartmental stuff that they're utilizing our grant writer, but these are not done through our grant writer.
They're pretty technical and specific, and would be unusual and ineffective to ask a grant writer of her skill level to try to
right,
pursue
to try and navigate.
Because it's just, you'd have to learn a very unique niche set
right.
of knowledge.
So now every department has to have the ability to write some grants?
Well, up until we hired the grant writer, every department was responsible for doing their own, and that's part of the issue. But jump in anytime.
That's the way the whole system's going. It's going to be grant, it will be all grant-driven eventually, because they used to just put money in a pot, and then the state would say, yeah, we're going to give this to Josephine County, we're going to give
right,
this
based on population or whatever.
And they don't, yeah, based on whatever. And they thought, hey, wait a minute, this is crazy because there's no oversight. We're just giving them money, and then they send back a letter saying we did what we honored with it. But now you have to apply for a grant, be very specific what that money's for, and then you have to follow those guidelines and their reporting requirements after that. So yeah. Everything is going to go to grants, where it used to be pots of money and silos of money that we were always working with before. Now it is, you've got to apply for that. And at the outset, you think, well, that's kind of ridiculous, because you know what? But you know what? It's really kind of a requirement that whoever's doling out taxpayer money knows specifically where it's going and for what purpose. Some purposes aren't allowed, and other purposes, this is their checks and balances, I would say. I have, you know, and you're right, it's going to get bigger, not smaller. To answer your question, eventually all money will come from grants.
Well, we're creating a bunch of busy
jobs.
Work during that.
Absolutely.
Of grant writers and grant reviewers.
Yep.
And then
grant follow-uppers, and you name it. It's a whole other
level
of government, but I think in a way... It's one that might be sorely needed, because the system, the old system, was abused so often, and money going up, right. helter-skelter.
And people
for
just
it.
Spending honestly, money to make sure they got the same amount next
exactly.
year.
Exactly. Spend it, yeah. you know, use it or lose it.
Or lose it, yeah. That's part of the mentality change, for sure.
Well, until there's another option for base funding for our department, this is what we have to work with, and we, so far, have managed to keep up with our reporting requirements and our auditing requirements. So.
What percentage of staff time does it take, this grant writing, monitoring, following?
Fortunately, I don't do the majority of that at this time. That would be a Sarah question. Okay. I can't answer that.
Well, no. This individual one looks good. I was just venting.
I can tell
I
you
understand.
That with everything...
it's a larger conversation.
Yeah. Everything that emergency management does tracks hours, times on projects, yeah. for the most part. It's probably one of the most documented departments that we would have as far as how time is allocated, because they have to report back to the state, mm-hmm. and also FEMA. Public Works would be another one that, with FEMA reporting in a disaster, you have to declare exact hours and time and equipment and all that kind
and
of
that's
stuff.
That's expensive to do that.
It is. It yeah. is. And it, unfortunately,
but a necessary evil.
It is
apparently.
How the system is set up. Is yeah. it the system that we would want? No. Is it efficient? No. But it's what we're subject
it's
to.
The game we're playing. Yeah. The
but
game
these
we're
are,
in.
A lot of these are like the rules in the NHRA. Everything's written in blood. If they did, they wouldn't have to go this route if they hadn't been abused, sorely abused in the past. FEMA, when it first started out, gosh, on Friday, how much did New Orleans get, and so on and so forth. They were just throwing money out of helicopters. And they thought, whoa, stop that. Whoa, this isn't worth it. So it was crazy.
All right. Let's bring it back. Here we are. Josephine County.
So it is a new IGA, therefore it goes to all of us, but it's budgeted. I believe it can go before the consent calendar. It's a budgeted, ongoing contract.
Yep.
Does it exceed?
Sounds good.
So we'll send it to WPS.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Merry Christmas.
You too.
I was just wondering, which order do you want us to take you all in? You got four, they got one.
All right.
Don't go ahead.
No, go for it. All right, up next we have juvenile justice provider agreements between Josephine County and ADAPT, Choices, Options, and On Track for Substance Abuse Treatment. Good morning.
Good morning. So you signed the IGA in October for the mental health substance abuse funding that came in. We've had 6 amendments since then, and contracts that should have been done in July are just now getting done. So these contracts are for continuum of care, that's outpatient, for indigent population or underinsured, peer mentor support, residential, and IDPF, which is the DUI funding, problem gambling treatment, the treatment side of things. I'm not doing a contract directly with Community Corrections, because they're already within the county, and those funds will just be sent over to them. Another thing with this IGA, I am providing funding for one of our school outreach officers. Comes out of treatment dollars. And so that has been a huge help for us. Also, Choices will be merging with Options and become a program under Options for Southern Oregon. So their contract is set right now for the 2-year biennium, but in January I'll do another amendment and all that money will move over.
It stays the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the funds have been dispersed to each of the providers that reflect past services that they've done for us. All providers met and discussed and agreed upon the funding levels in the contracts. Providers are submitting quarterly reports that are program and fiscal reports and reimbursed for services provided. All providers were audited last year, and any corrective actions that were needed have been made and resolved. The current contracts would be for Choices to receive $271,549. They will be providing outpatient, peer mentor, and the DUI funding, or services, sorry. Options for Southern Oregon will receive $188,196. They will be doing outpatient, continuum of care, problem gambling treatment, and residential. On Track will receive $133,770 for continuum of care outpatient and residential. And then ADAPT will receive $179,364 for continuum of care outpatient, peer support, and residential.
On your problem gambling treatment, does that come from lottery dollars? Do lottery dollars donate into that? Because
they do in some regard, but maybe
yes,
not this one.
Yes. So the lottery dollars, there's a certain portion that's, I think it's like 1% that's set aside for prevention and treatment. And then the state health systems is the one that contracts out on that. And so it's a very small amount. However, it's a very small amount. The great thing about the problem gambling treatment is it's absolutely free to the person struggling and any family members as well. So I wish we could have the same system with substance abuse, because we'd be a lot farther ahead than where we are now.
Well, it seems a really small price to pay for the problem that it is.
Yeah. Hmm. And
it really does.
Yeah.
You know, I would say
especially with all the money that comes in from it. So especially all the money that comes
in. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know,
so one thing that I don't know if you both are aware of, we have a provider kind of group network where the treatment programs actually get together. It was Sean, and they work through these budget details as a group. It's probably one of the most unique systems in the whole state, where we have providers willing to work together, and even though they're competition for each other, that they realize that what they're doing is community-minded, and they talk about, okay, this is what we can provide, this is what we can provide, and as a group, kind of agree upon or make a recommendation for dollars. Now, they don't always apply according to that. Some of them, it's like, well, I still want this amount. But for the most part, what we honor is what the group agrees with and works on. And it's been very successful. And it's, like I said, it's a unique thing in our community that doesn't happen in other places.
I think if they got in the same room and they said, yeah, John Doe is one of our, you know, we're really working on John Doe, and the other guy says, I'm working with John Doe. Well, I'm working with John Doe, because in a way, a lot of those vices are all connected, could be connected through one person.
Yeah, the provider meetings don't really accommodate that, however, but they all do. I mean, yeah. I just think it's great. We have five providers in our community, yeah. Which is a lot compared to Jackson County that has two. So it is unique. I think we did not RFA out or RFP out for this funding this year. We have in previous years, or previous bienniums, I should say. And really, I think what strengthens this group is not having that process and allowing them to come together and negotiate amongst each other. And what I do is, with all the reports and tracking that I'm asking them to provide to me, I'm able to say, here's what you guys did last year, so let's start here. And that's usually how we come up with it. I think we're probably one of the few counties across the state that do any check and balance, the reporting that is required. And some of that, although the providers get frustrated with me because I keep, you know, because I want all this information, but when the state comes back and says, well, we're going to reduce your funding because you only reached X amount of people, their database isn't up to date, and so then I have all the documentation that says, nope, we were right here on track, and so it's been a huge benefit in the long run for everybody.
Well, it sounds good. You really stretched my ability to track with you as you presented four items at once.
Okay.
Oh, okay, we're on this one.
Yeah.
But
I would ask that we pass these forward to the weekly business session to support. This has been our funding process mechanism. This is, all right, if you're ever asked, why does Josephine County retain the local mental health authority hat? This is that component. This is one of those pieces.
Right, one of the reasons.
So even though we contracted out mental health services to Options of Southern Oregon, the substance abuse and treatment portion we still retain and are kind of that navigating. And so today we have the AMPAC meeting that we just formed with those things, that this is that group that kind of coordinates those and such. So I'm not sure who the state would designate if we didn't keep that hat. But if the question comes up from time to time, it does. This is part of what we provide as a county in keeping that. And it keeps us at the table talking about the services in our community.
Gotcha.
So you want C1 through 4 all lumped into one?
Or just all forwarded. Yeah. They're all the same thing except a different amount to a different agency.
Okay. Sounds good. Nice work.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank
See you.
You
in an hour and a half.
I know. And I have three of the contracts all signed and ready for you guys, so you want me to just leave them with you, Wendy? And then I'll get the other. Well, I'll bring them all four at the same time, I guess. Okay.
Wonderful.
Great. Thanks.
And up next is Human Resources, a request for position addition and CAC program for juvenile justice. And after that, a request for annual non-union COLA policy decision. Good morning.
Morning.
We have the directors in the house.
So the first thing we have is, it's an addition of a position, but it'll be eliminating an existing position, so the actual cost is pretty minimal. The CAC program is a fairly autonomous program, and what we'd like to do is have the person overseeing that program go to a supervisory position, have oversight over a couple staff, and change the description a little bit to afford that supervisory role, and that allows a little easier oversight because it's challenging to supervise because as his program has grown and grown, he just doesn't have the time to really have the oversight he'd like. And it allows that program to have a supervisor running it, compensate the person a little bit, and in pretty minimal cost because we're going to eliminate the old position.
We have some definite interesting... several of our departments have divisions within them that are so unrelated from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then having a director...
He's the master of that.
And juvenile, public health comes to mind as well.
Yeah, they do as well.
But, I mean, literally, you have these completely different branches that environmental health and WIC, and juvenile, you become that catch place, too, for several different divisions where you have... the PO programs, but you have the mediation that's through the courts. You have the CAC. The CASA is kind of the liaison, even though they're outside. Sean's program got brought in under yours and
expanded.
All these different things. And what do you mean, Jim? You can't direct supervise?
Well, so just real quickly on this one, speaking of grants, really Tina Stafford, who has been our... officially, she's an advocate, and she's been with the county 15 or so years, has always been a department of one. So even though the CAC is a couple blocks away, that's okay. She knows what she's doing. I'm officially her supervisor, but, I'm not in the building. We meet when we need to meet. We talk about what we need to talk about. But now, and this is basically all her, she went after, her position historically has been funded through the CAMI grant, which the DA that prosecutes child sexual and physical abuse cases gets half of that, the other half goes to the CAC. Well, she fought for years to get a separate VOCA grant, which is Victims of, you remember?
Say
Mr. Morgan, the VOCA, what that stands for?
Victims of Crime Act.
Yeah.
And was told no year after year because we were county and not private nonprofit. And finally, she just kept at it, said, no, the OAR is everything. It doesn't say that. So why can't our center get some of this money? Finally, they said, well, yeah, you can. And so she effectively tripled her budget in the last, because not only got a first VOCA grant, but got a second one related to some other services. That's why we were able to hire the forensic interviewer, and that's also why early in the year we'll be asking for a half-time advocate position. So now, all funded through state grant dollars, but now there's 2.5 FTE there, and which makes it even more problematic. I'm not in the building. If she has a full-time forensic interviewer and a half-time advocate, it makes sense to me that she's a lower-level supervisor that can manage that
right. And
have the responsibility.
That gives her the responsibility where it was all falling on you. You're just you're going to say, okay, you can answer those questions.
Right.
And,
and really on paper, even though it goes from union to management, it's the equivalent of about one step. If you went up one step in the A scale... Yeah. Is about what it.
Is she a long-term employee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15 years.
Okay.
And so it's a bit more money. It's not a huge amount more money. It's equivalent of what we would normally do for promotion.
And it says, what, $400 a month? Is that what it is?
About that, yeah.
Okay. Which in taxes means she'll actually take a pay cut.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And she, and like you said, Commissioner Dent, she's already at the top of the, she's in the longevity steps. She's a longevity step 10, tenure. So she's basically topped out.
Right. No. On the U.S. Sounds logical.
That was my next question, but I didn't know if I was allowed to ask it, but thank you for offering that information.
Anyway.
Why I ask about how long you've been here.
That's what I thought.
Any questions about the necessity or need? This isn't, so I'm curious, because we're
is
changing
a, low enough,
a job description.
This is a low enough dollar amount that the liaison can sign off on it.
Okay.
And what's coming to the board is the job description. The board has to approve the job description, and I just need vocal approval. It doesn't even need a
vote. It's not overstretching his budget or anything at all. You've got it within your...
The VOCA grants.
Yeah. In these grants.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the job description needs board approval, which is why we're here, and then the position change can be done with just the liaison.
So I move we approve the job description.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0.
Thank you.
And then you'll get the rest.
We'll get the paperwork and have. Yeah.
That's
easy.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you again, Jim.
Yeah. All right. So the next item is an annual decision the board makes. And our policy states that January 1st, the board will decide to offer the non-union group cost of living adjustment based upon the consumer price index, the rate of inflation, unless the board wants to do something else, is what the policy states. I met with the department heads at the last department head meeting and let them know what I was going to recommend, which is a 2.5% cost of living adjustment, and that's based upon what the inflationary rate, that's budgeted, so every year, Finance and I look at what the market trends are and estimate where we think the inflationary rate will be, and this year we hit it right on the money, 2.5%. Before I sent it to you all, the DA and a handful of other department heads met with me and asked if I would also offer some secondary options other than a 2.5% COLA. And the reason they wanted to look at that is there have been some recruiting challenges primarily in the DA's office, but also within the non-union group. And the reason that the challenge is if you look at our retirement structure, there are two accounts. There's a pension plan, and then there is a deferred comp, basically, plan that's called the IAP plan. And almost every government agency in the state pays for the 6% that goes into the IAP plan. In Josephine County, the employee pays for it. And what that does is it makes so that we have a strategic disadvantage versus our other agencies. And that's just something that the county has accepted pretty much the whole time we've had our retirement plan. So what I have in front of you is a couple different options that would allow us to mirror what other agencies do and limit the cost in order to do that. So option one is just affirm the normal process, which is a cost of living adjustment. Option two is to forego the COLA, so don't give a COLA, and instead pick up that IAP contribution.
Does that IAP contribution go for all personnel involved? In other words, there's some people that aren't in the IAP, correct?
The only people that wouldn't be affected by this are a handful of elected officials who have opted out. So that's it. Everybody else.
All employees are in the PERS system.
Yeah. So the...
Okay.
Yeah, so it's...
The only employees that have been given an option not to be in PERS are elected officials.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's under PERS rules.
And...
That is more expensive?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, it's fine.
The City of Grants Pass at one point had negotiated a pay raise because they were going to have this employees contributor. It were back and forth, mm-hmm. but the city contributed, and then the employees were going to contribute, and so they had negotiated pay compensation as a result, and then they changed it, and they felt kind of gypped. Wait a second, you know, that was something that was going to do. So my only concern is this now, if you do this for the non-union, is this going to be all through all employees and then now the county is moving towards? I remember at one point Arthur saying, I didn't finish that thought, I do that, sorry, that this will be a chain reaction. I remember Arthur bringing to us once that it actually is a benefit because we pay lower income tax, because by the employee doing the 6% contribution, it's pre-tax, so it lowers the income. And so therefore the income tax we're paying is lower because it's taken out pre-tax. So,
but when you get that money at the end, the person pays that tax. It all comes forward.
Yeah, I'm just talking out loud so that we've looked through it all, because, and quite frankly, I should probably abstain from contributing, because I wasn't given an option. I am PERS, and so I am affected by that decision if it happens. And I don't know where you guys stand, but I know that I am affected. So
I'm curious about,
I want to disclose that as a potential conflict.
I'm curious about item number two, because right now the deferred comp, the employee puts in whatever they want up to 6%. It doesn't say 6%.
So that is...
That's different.
But I just thought you said the IAP, the 6% IAP, was the same as deferred comp.
It's the same structure. So there's so there's two kinds of retirement plans. There's a defined benefit and
that's
a defined... so that's like a pension plan. You've been in this many years, you get this amount of money. So that's a traditional pension plan. And then there is a defined contribution plan, which is basically you put money into a plan, and then that money goes up or down based on the market. But there's no guarantees of return. It's strictly based upon what the market does. And that's what the 6% is for.
But these are not deferred comp that are voluntary to employees to take part
in. No, they have to. They have to pay it.
They don't have an option to be in the IAP if they're first.
We do have a voluntary 457B plan that people can elect to participate in whether they want to or not. The county doesn't match. Elected officials have an option of saying, we don't want to be involved in state retirement plan. We're going to have a completely separate 457B plan. And so a handful of elected officials have that.
And that is where the employee contributes whatever they want up to maximum of 6%
yes.
of their pay.
Yeah.
And the county matches that.
Yeah. But that's only for elected officials,
okay.
And there's only a few that have elected to do
that. And for employees that voluntarily do that, the county does not match.
Yeah.
So it's simply up to that 6% at the county's, at the employee's expense for deferred comp. Only elected officials that are not in PERS have a county match.
Yeah.
Other employees take part at their own expense alone.
And our 457B plan, it's the equivalent of like a 401K, only it's 401K is actually the name of the tax statute.
But there's no guarantee on, like PERS has a guarantee, this is how much you're going to get every year.
Yeah,
that's
a defined benefit.
It's up, down, whatever, and boy, you know, but this particular plan says it's only going to be this.
If the market goes up,
if it goes down,
it goes down.
If the county entered into the market on your behalf with no guarantees.
Yeah.
Okay. If you think of it this way, when PERS started, they had Tier 1, and there was a guarantee of payback. And there's still some Tier 1 employees around, not a lot, but the liability to the county remains as long as that person is drawing from
the check.
Okay. So then Tier 2 was the next phase, and they have a lesser guarantee. So these guys are at 8% at Tier 1. The Tier 2 is like at 2% or something like
whatever
that.
Whatever the numbers.
The numbers
more,
aren't
more
exact.
More complex
but,
than that, but yeah.
But yeah, but Tier 2 is not guaranteed in the same way that Tier 1 is. And that ended at a certain year as well. And then they had something called OPSERP, which is essentially their Tier 3. And that was going along, and at some point in the PERS reform a few years ago, they stopped the majority of those going to those three programs, and they've put everybody in this IAP program. So now every year you get a statement, if you're in PERS, of two separate programs, your original one and your IAP. And
at what point does it become all IAP? Is there a shelf life on...
If you're in Tier 1, so if you're an employee who's worked for the government for 30 years, you'll draw a Tier 1 benefit until you die, basically.
Doesn't the spouse take over after that and continue
to
pay the spouse?
Well, they have two options.
He or she dies?
there's two options. They have one where they don't, and it's and you get paid a little higher, and then there's one where they do.
You get bought off.
And you get in, a little bit. It's a little lower. So.
But we don't control any of that.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. I'm just wondering. You know, hers is a separate organization. Tier one is slowly but surely weeding its way out.
But see, all the things that cost us greater formally, now there's one remaining thing statewide that is costing us more than anything, and is that they allowed
University of Oregon?
Actually, Oregon Health Science University is greater than University of Oregon.
Yeah.
So they allowed outside contracts, sponsorships, to contribute towards their base salary, and they're getting PERS off of these extra contracts versus it should have been retirement based on your salary. If you get a contract for a time frame, fine. That doesn't go into retirement. And so that's why you have some people getting paid $50,000 a month. That's not what the system was intended to do, but they never put an income cap. But the tier one
how
people
do they sleep at night.
Oh
no, I hear you. But they try
really
to
nice beds.
Up, yeah, they keep trying
really
to
nice sheets.
they sleep on silk sheets. That's yeah. what
but it's
Giza Con.
But they keep trying to come up with reform ideas. They either don't get through the legislature or they don't get through the courts.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the other fixes they put in place that were costly were tier one, tier two. And so they're down to somebody new isn't going to be that huge burden that the other ones
right.
are. They're a standard.
OPSERP's completely sustainable, but we're paying for the unfunded liability of tier one and tier two.
We're trying to find a way to pay for it.
But the reality is Oregon, if you look at every state in the country, they all have different retirement plans, and different big cities have them. PERS, I believe, is 82% funded, and that's a very big concern. That being said, we're in the top five or eight most funded in the country.
Really?
I think Illinois is like 25% funded.
Yeah, all the horses got out.
Yeah. So, and that number is actually, the market's been very good in the last 8 years or so. So that number actually, when they look at it,
it's
significantly better.
Pulling
it back into the question.
Yeah, so how does this work? I mean, I understand the 2.5 and the recruitment thing, because the 6%, every agency around us except us does the 6% contribution.
Almost everyone. There's a few in the state that don't. We're
one
of the few. I know we in the DA's office, there's four positions that are not filled currently, and there are two people that didn't take the position exclusively because of this issue. Well, one was exclusive to this issue, and one was partial this issue and another as well. But this was a major factor in why we couldn't land two DAs.
We've got to be competitive if we're going to fill the positions in Josephine County. That's so sorely needed. And DA is one of them.
So,
and if we can't be competitive and we're losing people because of it, it's time to fix it.
And so option two, it does cost more than option one. It's,
annually.
So the cost of the general fund is $47,000. That estimate was put together by finance. Option three is basically the same thing, but we're not. We don't give a COLA. We pick up the 6% IEP account, and then we also reduce the pay in the longevity steps by 3%.
You know what? Once you get to longevity, you don't get a raise for years. I would be opposed to that. Of setting that standard.
Is it reduced from what, 6?
So currently it's 2%, 2%, 2% for a total of 6 in the longevity steps. And this proposal would be 1%, 1%, 1%.
And they're by years you get here. So 10 years, 15 years, 20 years?
Yeah.
So it's not like you get a raise every year. Like when you're in the other steps, every year you can get a raise. You get to longevity. You're 5-year circuits before you get a raise.
Yeah.
I would be opposed to
And I would, think 3 would be counterproductive to what we were talking about at the DA's office.
Yeah,
it's, that's
the recruitment.
That's a head turner in the wrong direction in my mind.
Yeah, and it's I put it in there as another option to reduce the cost by a bit.
Yeah.
Well, and it helps round out the subject
by
having options that are.
Yeah.
But longevity would not. I mean, a lot of our department heads are in longevity because there's only 7 steps in department head ones. But I could tell you, there's not a lot that you look forward to once you get to longevity. You know you're going to be at that pay for a long time.
And as far as the county commissioner goes, there ain't no such thing as longevity.
Yeah. Well, the elected officials are completely separate.
I should bring up, though, for transparency, every year, if the NU gets the adjustment in pay, the elected officials do as well. The option two would only impact those people that are in the PERS.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so they would not, so like for instance, if somebody were on the deferred comp, item two would do nothing.
Wouldn't affect them at all.
Wouldn't affect them at all. Mm-mm. But they also don't get the NU 2%?
No, in option one, they would get the 2.5.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's base pay.
Yeah. Although the electeds have a structured, mandated process for an annual review of salary.
So, where NU does not. This is the NU structure. So, yeah. I mean, it is curious that we've lost two positions because of it, and they're hard positions to fill in the first place, to get attorneys to come here when our criminal justice budget is not stable, to get people that say, I'm willing to come there. Yeah, no, that's a make or break for my decision. That's
And a challenge with DAs across the state right now is about 6 or 8 years ago, most of the universities that were training attorneys reduced the number of students that went through their law programs, and it was because the market shrunk and they didn't need that much. The market has rebounded, and they haven't changed their
So you're saying it's amount. More competitive?
So there is, it's more competitive, and there is a shortage of deputy DAs statewide. And so that is a challenge recruiting. I was at an HR meeting, and one of the topics that was brought up by three different counties, hey, what are you guys doing to land deputy DAs? We're having a hard time. So that is a challenge. And what we used to do and had consistent results is having limited return. We're looking to change our marketing strategy because what we used to do just isn't working.
So just to be fully clear, I'm an elected official that chose the 6% IEP. If I choose option one, am I giving myself a raise?
No.
You're losing 2.5% every year.
No, if I choose
option one, you are getting a 2.5%.
I'd be getting a raise. If I choose option two, what happens? Does the county start picking up my 6%?
Correct.
Yes.
So I also gave myself a raise.
Either way,
so to speak.
Your take home would go up.
Right.
Because you wouldn't have to contribute. But now that I'd like that good, I think I'm following you here. You're going to pick up the 6% that now comes out of my paycheck. Mm-hmm. So my take home pay would go up if I'm in this program.
Your base salary.
You're not going to match that 6%. What your obligation to the employee is stays the same. They just don't have to put the 6 in to get the match.
So option one, we give an inflationary increase to all the non union group.
And this is just one time, 1 year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes forward.
It's the base that moves forward.
Right.
So everything.
And we renegotiate in a few years and ask again.
Yeah. Well, we just look at what's the inflation. So, what does houses and milk and everything cost? And And so that's what option one is, just give an inflationary increase. It's not above inflation. It's just trying to keep up with inflation. Option two is we're not going to give that. But instead, we'll pick up the 6%. It overall would be more money in their pocket than... Yeah. 2.5, and that's why I said it does cost a little bit more.
But in 2 or 3, 4 years, they're going to come back, and we're going to have to do a cost of living increase then or something.
So here's something to consider.
That's done.
The
through.
Unions, we have four unions, right? Their process of raises goes through collective bargaining, where they actually negotiate. JJ is our dedicated negotiator on behalf of the county with the department heads or whoever the people are in the team for that. And they negotiate, and they usually sign a contract for 3 years. And you might see a 3% a year in that contract. So over the 3 years, they got a 9% increase or something like that.
I remember that from dealing with it over at
the city. Okay. Yeah. The non-union has no collective bargaining.
Right.
So this is our process of once a year, we're asked to look at it because the people they supervise might have things in their contracts, but they do not have something. And if we just, you sit here, these guys got them, but you guys are not, that's where the compressions things start to come in, where you have employees making more than those
that don't
want to
become
them.
Supervisors.
Correct.
Because they're,
So that's why I asked the question about if option two happens, is this a chain reaction to the other unions?
It won't guarantee anything to the unions. I guarantee they'll ask for it, but to be honest, every time I negotiate with some of the unions, they ask for it anyway. And it's up to the board whether they're willing to grant that. And you look at the totality of their total compensation, salary, benefits, and then retirement is a benefit. So that's something that the board will look at and determine whether they're willing to include that in the contract and whether
and
they
I
are
somehow
or not.
Escaped the last 11 months. We didn't talk any union.
We haven't had any open contracts. Yeah, we haven't.
It hasn't come up yet.
Yeah, next.
So next year I'll probably.
Yeah, next year we have two.
I wanted to give you the backstory.
Yeah, next year we have two.
And elected officials, where their chip comes up once a year, as the
at the budget committee,
at the budget committee, where the compensation committee says, "I think elected officials," and they go individually what they think they need to be. So as we say, okay, you're losing 2.5 by going to number two. You're not going to get the 2.5% cola, but it's up that the avenue for a raise along that line comes through that budget through the committee, the compensation committee, and is elected and is voted on. Correct. Oh, you don't need to raise your hand. You're the chairman. Let's go to the bathroom.
Are you
Let's
stretching?
Take a recess. There we go. Let's go to the bathroom.
Taking a turn.
My question is okay. So I've been involved in number two, where I put in 6% and you match at 6%. Now you're just going to say, okay, it's only 6%. Do I lose the 6% in the match from the last 3 years?
No, because it's anything that you put in, it goes into the same account. It just depends on who contributes to that account. Currently, I contribute to it. If this changes, then the county contributes to it.
So the thing that I would say is, if you're going to go the option two, is that you also do something like for those electives that are deferred comp, that the county puts the 6% in, potentially the match, that it's the same for both. That if the county's putting the 6%, the county puts the 6%.
I think what we have, I'll have to double check, but I think what we have is
so it's not
a
separating out a group.
Yeah.
And there's a small portion. We have 11 elected officials.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of the 11 are affected by it, but I think if you're going to offer something to a group that excludes four people, you have to find a way to make sure that you cover them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the current structure is the county puts in 6%, and then they'll match up to 6%. I think
the county
that's
puts in, or
the employee puts in 6%.
The county puts in 6, and then we'll match up to another 6, I think is what it's currently structured at.
Say that again.
There is no match if the employee is not putting something in.
So you're saying
there's a base 6% the county puts in?
I think there's a base percent of 6%, and then they'll match up to another 6%. I think that's what it is.
That's what my 401k was when I was in the private sector. They put this much in, and then I can choose up to this much that they would. So I'd have a total of 12 from the
and I,
employer.
I believe that's the structure that we put in last year, or the year before.
Okay. Well, I put in 6. This is strictly this way it was explained to me. I'm on deferred comp, and they said you can put in up to 6% of your pay. We will match that 6%. You just said the county pays the 6% already, and then I can match it with another 6%. And then you'll match it again. Because it's not a match.
I'd like to verify that, but do you see what I'm saying?
I think it's
I'm starting
around.
To get a
headache.
Circuit breaker trip in my head. Yeah, I don't get it. Because if it's what you're saying, that sounds odd, right?
Because
then we're up to 18%.
And now we're up to 18%,
which sounds odd.
I put in 6. Well, you put in 6.
But I don't understand
I put in
the whole
6,
world,
and then
so.
You match it with another 6.
No. So here's my little chart. The county puts in 6%. Employee puts in 6% that the county will match for a total county cost of 12%. I think that's the current
structure. But then I get my 6% back, so I'll get a check for 18% when I get out of here? I've already put 6 in.
Well,
I get my 6 back and another 12?
You can verify that, because generally it's a
match. Yeah. Excuse me. Okay. Holy moly.
Want to just go over and grab it real quick just to verify? Or where it's at. I just like to verify, but it's one of those things that I know that option two is something that is a big deal to employees, and it has been
for attraction and retention.
It has been before I was at the county. I mean, it was something that was a big deal at the city. It's one of those things of the competition of I had somebody. We lost two clerks to Jackson County. That they went over there and they were like second in command or something like that. Mm-hmm. And both of them said straight off the bat, oh, our engineer that left that went over there. He said straight off the bat, even if the pay is the same, I got a 6% bump because they take on my purse. Well, I know it's affecting employees right now.
Right. Here's the way it was explained to me when I signed up for deferred comp. I, as an employee, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I can just get my check. But if I can put in up to 6%, I could have put 3% in and you'll match the 3%. I could put 1% in, you'll match the 1%. That satisfies the program. Or I could put up to 6%, yeah. and you'll match the 6%.
Yeah.
But I can't put in 8 and you'll match the 8.
No.
So that's why I was, it was, I'm half, I get 6% at separation. I get my 6% back. I got to pay taxes on that because it's pre-tax out now. And then I get another 6 that you all put back, the county put in. So I get a total of 12%. But 6 of it's my own money.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're going to pay my 6%, so my paycheck now goes up. Then I can still put 6 back in, and then you'll match that 6?
I think that's what it currently is. So the county puts in 6. If you do nothing, you get 6%. If you put in 1%. I think that's what changed last year or the year before. I think it was the year before.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
I would just
verify
say,
that. Could you do that?
I will.
Sandy's coming over to verify.
I would just say that if it's going to be 6% of the county picks up for one, it's the 6% the county picks up for the other. So that it would, either way, the county's matching the 6% no matter what, but it's that they're equal so that it's not hurting one over the other. That everybody's on the same page. So if it's option one, it's a raise for the NU group. If it's option two, it's the county is paying the 6%, whether it's deferred comp or IAP.
If you elect option two, I would also recommend a policy change to how we do pay increases, because currently we have a pay increase at 6 months upon hire, and that's to offset the contribution. So if you've never been in the retirement plan, you have to be with the agency for 6 months before you start contributing.
So
at that six-month mark, we give you a pay increase to offset that.
So to clarify, your first 6 months of employment, you're not in PERS. You do not get put into PERS until you've been there 6 months.
Right.
And so that's why at the six-month mark, you're going to take a 6% pay cut. That's why they have a step increase at 6 months to cover that offset.
So you stay level. Yeah, and so my recommendation is if we elect option two, we...
Just go to annuals.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
You don't need a 6 months because that's no longer an issue.
Well, quite frankly, it's odd to do a six-month eval unless it's probationary. And then are you on an annual from the 6 month or are you on an annual from your actual anniversary?
It's from the actual anniversary, but it is a little goofy, yeah. Yeah. The question we have is, we had talked about this, and I think this was adopted, is... Four elected to opt out of PERS.
Mm-hmm.
County offer 6% plus a match, or is it just the match? I thought it was we...
Just the match.
I thought we did this and then the match. Do we contribute regardless of whether they do?
Put it is
in?
What you
only
thought.
Match.
We only match.
So
okay.
It's a maximum of 12.
Okay.
No, you can do more.
Oh, I can do
you
more,
can
but you can only go
more,
6.
But we'll only... Yes, it's
6 or 8. 6.
But I thought I was told when I signed up for deferred comp that I could put in, out of my paycheck, I could put in 6%. I can't go past that. Only 6% and you'll match 6%. Could I put 10 in but you're only going to match 6?
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's a deferred comp, you can always put whatever. There's legal maximums that based upon...
But the way he was explaining it, is that, oh, no, we put 6 in for you ahead of time. You don't put that in. And then you can put 6 in, and we'll match that 6. That becomes 18.
If you don't put any, we don't put any.
You don't put any. That's what I thought it was. That's okay. Thank you.
Maybe they didn't. I know Arthur and I talked about that. It just didn't get approved.
Yeah, and I was trying to find the policy before I came over.
Yeah.
I can't find it like that.
Well, if it's any different, it sounds like you're pretty confident.
Yes.
In your
if it came to me as a commissioner, I'm only speaking for myself. If your proposal came to me, I'd say no. I would say no. But I, you know, the proposal was explained to me. Mm-hmm. I could put in 3, and you're only going to match 3.
Mm-hmm.
I could put in 1, and you're only going to match 1.
Exactly.
My maximum commitment would be 6, and you'll only match 6. But I could put in 10, and you're going to only match 6.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the way that was explained to me, and that's fair. Because it keeps me out of the PERS system.
Yes.
I'm out of it.
Yes.
When I walk out of this building, you don't owe me nothing.
Exactly.
Other than what I
cut
have.
Cut you the one check, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And then don't let the door
hit
you.
And I have an investment. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Okay.
We love you.
Couldn't help it, Dan.
My friend.
So,
my friend.
Friend and cohort.
Commissioner. Always got my back.
Always.
Don't let the door hit me in my eye.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm kind of attracted to option two as well. And I like your addition to making sure it covers both sides. But that seems to make the most sense in the long run, just giving raises. We're in the same conversation in a couple of years.
Yeah.
If you guys aren't giving what your competitors are giving.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it is an expense, but we're offsetting it by not giving a cost of living adjustment. And so that offsets a good portion of that expense.
When was the last time this group was compensated or increased their compensation?
It's reviewed annually, but I don't remember.
The last couple of years they've gotten a COLA. Before that, it was 5 years with that one. Huh. So it really
depends. We're like back on track to be normal.
Yeah. A lot of it just depends on what the market's. When there's very low inflation, like, you know, you have years where it's only 0.5%, and that's what we recommend is 0.5%. And when the economy was really bad, I mean, the board just said, hey, I'd love to give you some raises, but we just can't afford it.
Right.
So that's the decision the board makes every year. And,
okay.
You know, the contracts we negotiated, when we told the unions, I'd love to give you more money, but we can't afford it. So in the contract, they didn't get raises either. So
right. And we went throughout the city, the police took 3 years off taking raises.
Yeah, so,
then, of course, you had to get back to it if you wanted to do recruit.
But statewide, that was a lot of agencies because the market countrywide was historically low, and you know, you're not going to increase salary when inflation's negative. So,
I guess for me, I just keep whichever option you choose to go forward, keep everybody in the same, whichever program they're in, keep them on an equal playing field so that it's not, If we leave it as is, okay, I declare a potential conflict, or does he declare a conflict? You know, it's like which one of us, but if you put us on the same page.
It's like when the budget committee, when the compensation committee recommends a raise for elected officials, here we are, we're elected officials, you're voting on your own raise. Mm-hmm. And I don't, you know, we...
I'm the only one who hasn't the last few years. That.
Always an awkward moment.
Yeah, but it's, you know, that's a statewide.
But you're at that time you're part of the budget committee, and you can, if three of us opted out of the budget committee, that's not
not enough.
Don't have a quorum then. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that there is consent to look at number two. Based on that, what I'll do is draft some documents for next weekly business session that clarifies what we talked about.
Sounds good.
If you're in agreement with that.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
What's that? Absolutely.
Yes, I'm okay with that suggestion for now.
Yep. So, Darren, Stan, there you go.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, so next in the agenda is item four, other business. Anything that should rightfully come before the board at this time. Otherwise, it would be five board business matters from commissioners.
I did talk to, and I think I think if you hadn't heard about it, but the Fords who always come to our meetings and stuff, I called Mrs. Ford yesterday, and she told me that Larry Ford is in the hospital over in Providence Hospital, and that he had to have one of his legs amputated. And so I think with this, I think there's a card floating around here somewhere that I think we need to send over. And I asked, because I was in Medford yesterday, you know, was there an opportunity to go by and see Larry, and she said he's not in a real...
happy mood, sure.
Yeah, he's not in a real frame of mind. He's having to deal with it. And so I told her, she's going over this weekend, and I told her to make sure to let him know that he's in our thoughts and our prayers. We miss him at the meeting because he was always good for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's hope for the best.
Yeah, that's tough to hear. Parks Board member as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't have anything to share.
Okay. Last night I attended the Southern Oregon Timber Industries Association. I was talking with some of the members that served on the suppression subcommittee with me, and it seems like every time it's presented, there's something else added that they're going for. They said that the Senate created a wildland fire committee that they're going to be trying to see about implementing some of the recommendations, and then the governor is going to do an omnibus bill to cover most of the rest of it. The good thing is that Senator Berchiger is co-chair of that committee. Senator Golden from Ashland is the chair. At AOC, he met with a small group of us. We were bringing up our concerns about them putting building code restrictions and land zoning restrictions into state law. To the recommendations of one of the early committees was to prohibit any development in a WUI, wildland urban interface. And they put up this map up in Multnomah County that showed this little red strip of wooey in between the town or something like that, and saying, we just don't recommend you building here. But if you pull up a map of our county and Jackson County, the entire counties are wooeys for the most part. And so it would mean no development in our areas outside of the city of Medford could have buildings and the city of Grants Pass could. Nothing surrounding those areas. And we all said, yeah, that's not going to work in our community. And the mandated fireproofing building requirements, we also had concerns about. We said it needs to be a local requirement. And not to mention, somebody built a house 40 years ago or 70 years ago, they're not going to get a permit to keep their house the same. So when do you say now you have to have roofing material that's fire preventative, or your eaves are closed, or your screens are this small, or your decking's this? Okay, fine, you can say that for a new building, but really the fire risk is about the plants around your house and the clear spaces and such. So we've been, the small group of commissioners that I've been a part of, has been trying to push back and say, let it be locally controlled. Let us have the say locally versus a state mandate, because you're not going to need the same thing in Baker County as you are in Josephine. So, again, I reiterated that with Matt Donegan last night.
To come up for review by that board? Or?
Well, you know, Mark Stevenson has said to us that there's been some counties that have voluntarily implemented those restrictions in their code. And but what the wildland group was looking at is putting a statewide implementation of state code changing, that if you build in a WUI, you have to build to the standard. Kind of like they put in state law last year, you have to have an electric car plug, or you have to have, you know, okay, does that make sense in O'Brien? Only if you wanted it at your house, you can install that. But again, a statewide solution is not necessarily the best
option.
Doesn't
fit all.
Correct.
Right.
So we're still pushing to have the local flavor so that we can see what our community's desires are. We can go through the hearings locally versus be forced to take on a state code that is not necessarily in our best interest.
No, and that's why I'm glad you were there, because they do have a tendency to change things.
Yeah.
That sound good to a group of, but the rest of us folks that live in rural Oregon doesn't sound good at all. So
yeah, I pointed out to them that we were a county before they were a state. So if they tell us to stop building where we've built, it's not going to fly.
It surprises me, and they're still not doing it. They don't have any care in the world about it. But going to standby generators, you're going to put all this stuff on my building, and yet you don't tell me I need to have a standby generator so I can activate my pump and protect my own home. That just bothers the hell out of me. You're going to shut my electricity off, that shuts my pump off, and I'm out there with a hose watching the fire come across my front yard. And or even if it was just I want to put a sprinkler up there and wet my roof down. You know, these houses, and a lot of times it doesn't matter what your roof's made out of. You look at all of Santa Barbara and my aunt's house down in Paradise. It had a shake roof. It had everything it was supposed to be, or not a shake roof, a tile roof. Well, the spark blew up underneath the tile roof and lit the attic on fire. Tile roof didn't make a darn bit of difference. It slowed down that fire by maybe 20
seconds.
No, the wind
pushed everything there.
And it doesn't.
Lack
I've got
of
a metal
routes,
roof.
Yeah.
I've got a metal roof on my house. That's probably nothing's going to blow up underneath it. That's hunky dory. But I live in the city of Grants Pass. But if I were out in the county, I think rather than stating, okay, you can't build here and you can't build here and you have to do this. Why isn't there? Okay, you have to have. You know, because Pacific Power and Light is going to shut off everything you have, guess what? My CPAP machine doesn't work now. I can't sleep at night. So it's just a whole bunch of stuff that emanates around what they're telling me I can do. We've already got the stuff that you need to voluntarily. You need to. And I was at a house out in Cave Junction on Lone Mountain Road the other day. And the guy says, wow, you've really done well. It's his whole 5 acres is like a park. All the limbs are trimmed up to 6 feet or whatever that requirement is. Everything is all in any, next door, right at his fence line. He was able to talk his neighbor into saying, I need to run a cat next to your fence for 20 feet. And the guy says, you get 10 feet. Run your cat through there. And what was the whole yard next, the whole acreage next door? Manzanita. When that stuff gets going, you can be 100 feet away and it'll burst, it'll light a match. That stuff, it really burns hot. nothing we could do about that guy, but he's doing his part voluntarily. Right. And we come back in and mandate that this is what your roof's got to be made of, this, and you want that control. When it doesn't work, you better be set to take the responsibility. I did everything you said, and I'm looking at a pile of ashes because it didn't flow it down a bit.
Well,
and I didn't have water.
They even pushed to saying annual inspections of properties. And I'm like, no, personal property rights come into play here. And
we should have something to suggest. If you want that, you invite that inspection. Not mandatory inspection, but you invite it. We supply an expert to come out and give you the, like it is now. We have experts who go out and tell you what.
Folks.
Well, the FireWise program, the limits of the FireWise is that you may say, I want to take part in it, and your neighbor wants to take part in it, but the FireWise official program requires 8 neighbors to agree to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you have 7 of the 8 that agree and the 8th doesn't, the whole program isn't allowed in that community. They don't get the grant dollars for the help.
But I think it's not necessarily a grant dollar. I have a house, brand new house. Please come out there and tell me what I can do, my own person, at my expense. I want a resource that comes out and says, this is what you need to do. And you can do it. Thank you very much. It's just like OSHA. I can invite OSHA to my business, and they leave the ticket pad in the truck. I just want, please tell me what I'm doing wrong before you walk in with a ticket pad. And that's a service to the community. But to mandate it at the state level, what you're saying here, they want to mandate, oh, that's the whole both counties because we're in that red zone.
I know, and I wonder if you could get something like that grant funded from the state out of some of those funds.
That would
say, hey,
be
this
more
is all
to me.
In reduction, yeah.
That would be more important to me to be a resource.
And have that person on staff.
And then justify the importance of that, of using like that resource.
Honestly, the biggest impact at this point, because if you look at the council, they produced a report that had 37 recommendations. Now that has gone to the governor, working with the legislature to determine what of those recommendations they actually choose to make into law. So the key is going to be advocating in Salem and taking part for the next process to make sure that if those laws are going to affect, how is it impacting locally?
Mm-hmm. Who was involved? Is it just 2 counties involved in that committee you're on that you were with last night? Is it just Jackson and Jolstein?
Last night was just the Southern Oregon Timber Industries Association.
Who's in that?
So that's all the timber industry in the region. But
Curry, Coos?
I think it was mostly a 2 county thing there. But the group that met in Eugene with at the Association of Oregon Counties annual conference, a group of us met with Senator Golden because he's chairing this Senate Wildfire Committee that they just created. And we were pushing back on some of the local stuff and bringing to his attention. So that was Mark Bennett was the only county commissioner in the state that was on the top wildfire council. Then we had commissioners that were on the subcommittees. And so Tim Freeman from Douglas, myself, Court Boyce from Curry, Mark Owens from Harney were the commissioners that were on the subcommittees. And so in that meeting was Mark Owens, Mark Bennett, myself, and some of the other Eastern Oregon commissioners that met with Golden as far as our concerns about them putting statewide restrictions and not allowing local land use process to go forward. So the committee that is now existing is the Senate committee, and they'll pull forth witnesses and testimony at different processes in their hearings as they're looking at different legislation to pass, and then they'll vote on what they want to vote on.
Do you think some of that will get in this short session?
According to Representative Pam Marsh last night, yes. And Herman isn't
is
sure.
That Klamath?
No,
Ashland?
She's Ashland.
Ashland.
She's Ashland. So she was on the Wildfire Council, and so was Herman. And then Rep. Lynn Finley from District 60 was on there, too. And he came to some of our suppression subcommittee meetings. But, you know, they're not all on the same page of what they want to see. So it depends on really who's guiding the ship. So at least Herman being co-chair helps. All of them, they'll bring forth a bill. They'll open it up for public testimony. And then who shows up to say support or not support or please take caution here or please do this and different amendments that can be brought forth. So they suggested there was going to be 3 bills in the short session and then the governor's going to present an omnibus. Herman wasn't certain. But again, look at how different last year's legislative session was. The committee is almost...
Was that a legislative session?
Oy.
It was a bully session, wasn't it?
Yeah. And the intent is to push through those things in the short session and then add to. It's going to be a lot. So that's the update from last night.
Okay. Glad you were there.
So anything else in matters from commissioners?
None for me.
Nope.
Okay. Then with that, we will be adjourned at 10:54.